You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Friday to you. We appreciate you being with us. We're in the middle of college football season, so naturally we're talking about college basketball to kick off our show today. A big game down in Dallas this weekend when the 16th-ranked Razorbacks take on 8th-ranked Baylor. It'll be at American Airlines Center, home of the Mavericks, on Saturday night, 6:30 tip-off. It'll be on ESPNU. And we're joined now by John Morris. John is the play-by-play voice of the Baylor Bears, announced this week as the winner of the Chris Schenkel Award for a long, distinguished career in college football broadcasting. He'll be recognized at the National Football Foundation banquet in Las Vegas in December. John, congratulations on the honor, first of all, and thanks for being with us.
You bet. That means I'm old, is number one what that means. But it is a real honor. And Steve Hatchell, the president of the National Football Foundation, when he called me about it, I said, Steve, there's been a terrible mistake. There are so many guys that are more worthy of this than I am. And I honestly mean that. But it is a real honor. And look forward to that banquet in December.
You called some Arkansas Baylor games back in the Southwest Conference, right?
I did. Several. So I started working with Frank Fallon in 1987 and then followed him doing play-by-play in 95. I think I did the last game we played each other, that cold game. Do you remember that?
Was
that?
Oh, yeah, 1991.
Cold, cold night there in Fayetteville. So, yeah, that one kind of sticks with me.
You know, Baylor lost over at Spokane the other night, lost to Gonzaga 101-63. First off, what happened in that game? Did you make the trip?
Yeah, I did. That's a very fair question. The game was not close at all. And it was sort of a setup because Gonzaga returns 81% of their offense and 4 of 5 starters, and it was at their place. It wasn't the kennel, the small place on campus, but Spokane Arena downtown. So they had 12,000 rabid fans there. It was a great atmosphere. So give Gonzaga credit for that. And for us, you know, not making excuses, but we've got one starter back and we lost 71% of our offense from last year. And so Gonzaga was much better prepared just with their returners than we were for that first game of the year. And they played really, really well. They played well. We didn't play well. Shot 3 of 21 from 3-point range. That's not going to win you any prizes. So it was just us playing against a really good team in Gonzaga. And Coach Drew said from the start, even before that game, said, we're going to get better by playing this game, whether we win or lose. And I think that's right. So we'll see how that plays out beginning on Saturday against Arkansas.
You know, a lot of times people, they want to frame facts as excuses. And I look at what, you know, happened here for Baylor. First off, that's a long trip. Second off, you're playing as like the Monday night football post game. I mean, this is a 10:30 central tip off out there. You're playing a good team. It's the first game of the season. When you take all of those factors into consideration, maybe Baylor could have played better, but it's really not that big of a surprise for you to lose like that.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. And I don't mention those things like you did as excuses, but they are facts that that our guys had to deal with. And it was just the margin, you know, it just got bad. The margin losing by 38, that was, you know, to lose is one thing, to lose by that much, that was the really tough thing. So, and then a long trip back, we got back to Waco at 6:30 on Tuesday morning. So Tuesday was a day off and back at practice Wednesday. And, again, like I said, hey, there's a recent history of games like this. 2 years ago, we lost bad to Marquette in Milwaukee. And I remember bouncing back and beating Gonzaga the next game. And then last year we lost bad to Michigan State in Detroit. And then from Detroit went to New York and played Duke a few days later at Madison Square Garden. And we didn't win the game. We lost to Duke, but played so much better. So unfortunately there's a recent history in that. And we'll see if that carries on this Saturday.
What's the feeling like down in Waco about this game this weekend? You're kind of in a situation like we are here where there's no football game this week. And so, you know, it feels like there's going to be a lot of eyes on this basketball game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think and we hope a lot of people come up from Waco. They're, our women's team played last night. They play again on or don't play again until next week. So really folks are looking for a Baylor athletics event to go to. drive to Dallas isn't bad. So we hope we have a good crowd there. We do all remember the old Southwest Conference days and Reunion Arena, which was Barnhill South. And try to tell people here who don't remember those days that Arkansas fans are very, very rabid and supportive of all their programs. We think there'll be a lot of red in that arena on Saturday.
Yeah, well, and I was going to ask you about that. I mean, you got I was going to mention Reunion Arena. And, Baylor basketball has come a long way, as you well know, over the last 15 years. What do you expect to see in the arena? I mean, like, you know, Arkansas was down at TCU last weekend for an exhibition. Yeah. There weren't a whole lot of people there, about 4,500 people. But I think about 60-70% of the stands in Fort Worth were red. I wonder what you expect to see from an attendance standpoint.
You know, I don't know. It's kind of hard to predict. I think there's a good buzz among our fans. And we've got a lot of alums in the Metroplex, so I think we'll have a good representation there. Mm-hmm. And how it compares to the Arkansas numbers, I really couldn't even predict. But I think it'll be good. I hope it's a good crowd. I hope it's a good atmosphere, you know, an early season neutral site game. It's great, but sometimes it's kind of hard to predict, you know, what the crowd makeup might be.
Baylor has a freshman, VJ Edgecombe, who I think a lot of people are real high on from an NBA draft evaluation. What have you seen from him, and what's he added to the team?
All I've seen are practices and just the one game so far, and he looked, he was good the other night, good in small spurts, I would say, but I think he can be better, and I think he will be as he just sort of adjusts to this level of play. Now, that's a tough opener for a freshman who's got a lot on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people looking at him to play against that Gonzaga team in that atmosphere. But he did fine. He did good. I mean, you can see those flashes of brilliance with him. So I think he'll be better having gone through that, and hopefully better Saturday against Arkansas.
I want to ask you, who put together Baylor's schedule? Because this is a killer schedule. I mean, you start with Gonzaga, you play Arkansas, and that's all in the first week of the season. A little bit later, you're going to play Rick Pitino's St. John's team. You might end up playing Tennessee. You're going to play UConn up at their place in early December. I mean, it gets you ready for the Big 12, but it's also it's quite the grind.
It does, and we had Coach Drew on our coaches show this week, and we talked about that exact thing, who put this schedule together, and he did it. I mean, he's got guys that do the legwork, but he okayed this schedule. There's a fine line or a mix of preparing yourself for conference play, you know, playing good teams, and the Big 12 is really, really good, or, you know, getting beat down, you know, if your schedule is too tough. But I think the Baylor program at this point is at a level where, you know, they need to be challenged. They need to play games, you know, that are really high profile games, like Gonzaga, like Arkansas, like UConn, you know, coming up, high profile games. And Coach Drew, like the Gonzaga game, he and Mark Few are really good friends, and you normally wouldn't play a game like that, your season opener. You know, you want to kind of dip your toe into the season and then maybe play that in week two. But they said, hey, this will be good for college basketball to play this game on opening night. Let's do it. And they both agreed to it. So that's part of the thinking, too, you know, preparing your team for conference. But if there's a really good matchup available, Coach Drew doesn't shy away from it.
Does Baylor play at American Airlines Center very often?
Not very often. Can't remember the last time we were there, but it's been two or three years ago. So, I mean, for a neutral site, it's really good. NBA arena. And again, we've got a lot of fans in the Metroplex. But to answer your question, not real often.
Yeah, you know, they played Arkansas down there. John Pelfrey's first year. Scott Drew was, you know, it was fairly early in his tenure down there, really before he had gotten things turned around and rolling. What do you think playing in an NBA arena? I mean, does it add anything to the value of this game?
I think so. I mean, it's a great venue, obviously, being an NBA arena. And I think our guys like that, you know. If that helps get them jazzed a little bit more for the game, that's great. But I'm sure it's the same for Arkansas also. So our guys, they are treated really, really well. You know, the hotel, the travel, the venues they play in, they are treated really, really well. And I think that's great. And I hope they play like they deserve to be there on Saturday.
I think it's pretty well known that Kentucky took a run at Scott Drew back in the spring after Calipari came here to Fayetteville. Why do you think he ended up staying in Waco?
It's interesting. I never heard anything about that. No, we're
flying under the radar.
Very glad. We were very glad he stayed at Baylor. And you guys don't know this, but I grew up in Danville, Kentucky, so 30 miles south of Lexington. So I was very – when Louisville called him first, and he said no, I thought, yeah, you know, tempting, but I can see him saying no to Louisville. And then when Kentucky called, I thought, I don't know if he can say no to Kentucky, you know, with the history there and everything. But it was so – you know, it was so Scott Drew, the way he went through the process. It wasn't his decision. It was his family's decision. And they went through all the, you know, the positives and the not so positives of leaving Baylor and what he's established here. And, you know, there's going to be a statue of Scott Drew in front of our pavilion at some point of what he's done here. Because, you know what, he took over the program when most coaches wouldn't have touched that job. And look what he's done, you know, won a national championship and made Baylor a yearly competitor, you know, in the conference and nationally. But it was a family decision, and they decided that their best place was here at Baylor. And we're very glad. I mean, I'm very glad. I've also got a son-in-law who's on staff, and he would have gone to Lexington with two grandkids if Scott had taken the job. So that was my wife's main concern, was don't let them take our grandkids to Lexington.
No, I get that. The most important thing.
Yeah, right.
Hey, I wanted to ask you about Baylor's roster. I'm looking at it. I think I see seven different countries represented on this roster. Number one, that's got to be, and I look at the names, you've probably been wearing out the pronunciation guide. But just the blend of all the different players that have come in here, what's that been like?
Yeah, really good. We had a coach, John Jakis, here, who was really into international recruiting, and he was a kind of our go-to for that. John was blessed to be named the head coach at Florida Atlantic, so he's in his first year there. Mm-hmm. But that was sort of, I guess that's sort of where the international pipeline started, but our other coaches, you know, have kept it going. And it's good. I mean, it's let's find the best players no matter where they are in the world, not just in the United States, and make sure they're a good fit for the culture of joy that Coach Drew has here at Baylor. And if those things mesh, you know, get them here, and we'll work on the language. If there's any language barriers, we'll work on that, but just find the best guys, best fits, and get them to Baylor.
Baylor got a big football win the other night over TCU. One of my best friends in the world is a TCU grad. His grandfather played for the Horned Frogs, so I understand that rivalry. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of people who don't understand just how bitter of a rivalry that is between those teams.
Well, it is, and it goes way back, like to the point TCU was founded as Addran College in Waco. So the roots of TCU go back to campus in Waco. And then just the long, long rivalry through the Southwest Conference to private schools, you know, battling each other. And then kind of went away with TCU not being in the Big 12 initially. And it was so great when they were back and added to the Big 12, because now we play every year. And it is Baylor's biggest rival. There's no question. Used to be a question, was it Texas? Was it Texas A&M? Was it TCU? You know, but those others have joined you guys in the SEC. And so now TCU is unquestionably our biggest rival. And they'd won four straight over Baylor, so that was a really, really big win last Saturday.
Of course, you got the Kendall Briles angle. He left Arkansas, right, went to TCU there now. That was a fun game to watch the other night. Baylor won on a last-second field goal. Let's get you out of here on this, John. Going back to basketball and Gonzaga the other night, what do you think Baylor learned about itself? Like, what did they do right that they're going to, you know, take into this game against Arkansas? What are the areas you think that they're looking to clean up?
Right. And you're right about looking at it that way, because Coach Drew, you know, will show him the tape, the good and the bad, but he'll show some good things, you know, that came out of that game. Also, I think the defense needs to be shored up. The defense was not good at all against Gonzaga, again, playing against a really good team. So I know they worked a lot on that this week. The 3-point shooting was bad. I talked about that, 3 of 21. And then just getting the rotation, you know, with the new guys. We had four new starters in that game on Monday. So now they've been through a game. And, you know, I think the starters working together, that chemistry and just the rotation, I think that's starting to kind of show itself. The good things were, we got a guy named Norchad Omir. He's an undersized big. He's really a four, but he was really good. He came from Miami, a transfer from Miami, played in the Final Four last year with Miami. And to see him was really encouraging. I mean, he's got a high motor and he's not big, but man, he plays big. So it was good to see that from Norchad Omir. And then you mentioned VJ Edgecombe earlier. He's got a game under his belt. And we got another freshman guard named Rob Wright from Montverde, who was really good. He came off the bench and scored 10 points. And at one point, Pat Nunley and I said, he's our best player on the floor. So that was really good to see for a true freshman in that environment to come in. So those are just some of the positives from that first game.
John, you've been gracious with your time. We appreciate you. Congratulations on the award and all your success, and good luck this weekend.
Thanks very much. It's great to be on with you guys. I appreciate the opportunity. Look forward to the Old Southwest Conference reunion, Baylor in Arkansas on Saturday.
It's always fun when you get these Old Southwest Conference teams together. I love it. John, thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
All right. When we come back, Ethan Westerman will be with me. We'll talk some more Arkansas-Baylor, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Ethan Westerman here with me now. Arkansas and Baylor, we'll continue to talk about that here for a little bit. On 6:30 Saturday night, American Airlines Center, down in Dallas. Ethan, you were sitting with me a couple of nights ago when they played Lipscomb. What did you think of the game?
Yeah, I thought that once they decided to drive the ball, they had a little bit of success. That was, I think I probably was getting on your nerves. I mean, I was just getting frustrated seeing that they just were kind of standing around on the perimeter waiting for a shot. And then it's just like, just drive the ball. You're having success whenever you drive the ball. Like, I felt like any time they just ducked their shoulder, drove, and got to the rim, good things happened. And there's some of their best three-point looks were after they had done that sort of action. So, you know, but it's hard to, you know, I think people are going to look at the three-point percentage and harp on that until that changes, and they should. Like, it's, you can't shoot that poorly from three. But end of the day, they beat a good team by 16, right? I mean, for your season opener and debut, that's a win that I think is going to keep looking better, because Lipscomb's a good team. They're favored in their conference. I'd expect that win will continue to look good.
There's so much glamour in shooting the three-point basket. And none of these players would be at Arkansas if they weren't good three-point shooters, for the most part. I mean, you know, you're going to have a bruiser inside here and there, but even the 7'2 guy, I mean, he can step out and hit a three. How hard do you think it is to get their attention and say, hey, look, man, you got to drive to the basket, and you don't just sit out here and you take these perimeter shots? Because I would assume for a lot of these players, that's probably kind of what they've done, whether it be on the AAU circuit, at their high school teams, whatever the case might be. They've been perimeter shooters, and maybe they're having to learn a different style of play right now.
Yeah, I think it can sometimes be – it's more just reinforcing, like, hey, this is how you'll get your threes. I think that's what any coach has got to do, is – make it clear that, hey, the way you get these open looks is by being good drivers in the first place, by creating those inside-out opportunities. But, yeah, you're right. If you're playing college basketball now and you can't shoot a three, like, it's just rare, especially for players, like, who are kind of in that, you know, like Zvonimir Ivicevic, who he can kind of he's sometimes better on the perimeter, I feel like, than inside. He just like, it's just such a part of the game now, where if you can't shoot, at least be a threat to shoot, then it's hard to find a real role for you. But there are still going to be those inside, just like, you know, Daniel Gafford will always be a inside guy. He's not, you're not a 3-point threat. There's
Jonas
still those
Ader's not a 3-point shooter.
Yeah, no, but he can shoot the mid-range. He busted Arkansas last year with the mid-range. So
there's a difference though between a 15-footer and a 21-footer.
Yeah, but for the most part, I feel like the guys who can make those mid-rangers typically can step out and hit a three. Daniel Gafford, you didn't ever want to see him pulling up anywhere.
Like, I wonder who the 3-point shooters are on this team. Like, if they're going to improve the 3-point shooting percentage, who are going to be the players that have to pull them out of the slump?
Boogie Fland, I think, is number one, which I know people probably look. I mean, his percentage was poor against Lipscomb. There's no
one of eight.
Yeah, but he's a guy that I think he is a three-level scorer, and he's just got to get the confidence and sometimes the reps. I mean, usually math does its thing. Like, you can be 1 of 8 one game and then turn around and be 3 of 5 and your percentage goes up. Sometimes, you know, you just have those games. I think he's a guy that clearly he can knock down a three. He can do that. A lot of his shots the other night looked good. They just didn't go down too. That happens. So he's one. I'd say DJ Wagner for sure another. Maybe Carter Knox, he has a pretty shot. I think he's one that could increase their three-point percentage. But, yeah, it's until these guys can just start to prove it, it's hard to really peg which ones can be your shooters. But, I mean, clearly, if they're at Arkansas playing for John Calipari, they can shoot threes. I mean, he's even said he thought three-point shooting was, like, their thing.
It'll be a strength, yeah.
Yeah, so they're seeing something that we're not.
Arkansas and Baylor, as we said, 6:30 Saturday night. It's going to be on ESPNU. And just to give you an idea, I mean, we're still in the middle of college football season, and ESPNU's carving out a slot for an Arkansas-Baylor basketball game. So this is a big deal on Saturday night. Arkansas ranked number 16, Baylor number 8. Those rankings, we know they're going to change next week after what happened with Baylor out at Gonzaga the other day. But this is what John Calipari had to say the other night about playing Baylor.
Got to go this weekend to Baylor. They got beat, so you understand what we're walking into. They're going to have a week of practice where they're doing loose ball drills, charge drills. I mean, it's going to be a rough house of competitive teams that are going after each other. We need that right now. Let's keep learning. Kansas, TCU, now this. We need a team to play us some zone so we figure it out. There's a couple other teams that we're playing play like this that are going to be hard games. We're going to play some teams that try to take 30, 40, 45 threes. How do you play that team? How do you rebound long rebounds? What do you force them to do? So we got to play every kind of team there is.
And Baylor, they have really challenged themselves in the non-conference. They start with Gonzaga. They play Arkansas. I think they got UConn coming up. And, oh, by the way, they got a Big 12 schedule. We're going to be playing some of the best teams in the country. I mean, this is it's kind of crazy what they're doing to themselves. I was listening to Scott Drew's radio show the other day. And he said, I laughed, and I asked one of my assistant coaches, he said, who's the scheduling coach that I can fire for this? And he said, you, coach, you put this together.
Yeah, that's funny. That's what you do whenever you're a program like Baylor, a program that's established itself over the past half decade as they're, you know, right in the same breath as a lot of these other. I mean, right now there's UConn because of what they've done the past years, but then that next tier, there's Baylor, I think, is right near the very top. I mean, just what they've done in recent years. That's what you do, and it's good for the game.
We mentioned this earlier in the show with John Morris, but you know, Scott Drew had a chance to go to Kentucky after John Calipari left for Arkansas back in the spring, and he decided to stay at Baylor. Calipari was asked about that the other night, about you know, the fact that Drew didn't go to Kentucky. Did he talk to him? Here's what he had to say about it.
Called me on it, yeah. And we haven't talked. You know, I think, again, seeing what Mark Pope's doing, good for him, you know, good for him. And it's a program that deserves that. Scott has done unbelievable work at Baylor and probably got comfortable there. And why would I go into that hornet's nest?
Just keeps poking the bear.
Yeah.
Keeps poking the bear at Kentucky. Missed a word there. He didn't call Calipari on it, is what Calipari was saying. you know me, I'm pretty oblivious to a lot of what's being said on social media, but are the Kentucky fans, have they picked that one up yet?
Oh, you know? My gosh. I saw so many side-by-side. Like, people literally spliced together Mark Pope press conference and John Calipari press conference and were like, look, like, trying to find Cal's worst moments or just, like, out-of-context moments that seem funny, like his you know what I'm talking about? Mm. About the shot that went in for somebody?
Yeah.
And they were, like, putting him side-by-side with Mark Pope saying something, like, really well-spoken. And they're like, look what we up. Like, basically, like, trying to be like, look at the upgrade here of, like, aren't you so glad we don't have to deal with this anymore?
They say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah. I mean, they're just obsessed right now. I get it.
It's a weird obsession.
Yeah, it's really strange. It's like they were going...
If we took this to court, there'd be a restraining order.
Yeah. There was a... That's great. That was clever.
I'll throw you off your game.
No, I was just thinking about after the game. I looked on so every team always posts their final score on social media, and those are just go to the final score graphic. That's where you'll get the good stuff. Mm. And it was Kentucky fans after Arkansas wins by 16 of like, oh my goodness, look how bad y'all are. Blah 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 blah. Like only beating this team by 16. I'm like, clearly y'all don't pay attention to college basketball. Like this is a good team that they played and. I don't know who Kentucky played, like Wright State or somebody in their opener.
Blake, can we cue up the Smurfs theme when we start talking about Kentucky? I think that that'd be a nice little touch.
But it's just, I mean, I just don't understand like that is that there are people that are fans of them waiting around for the like just waiting on Arkansas games just to say stuff like I'm going to keep up loosely with what Eric Musselman's doing at USC and look at those results. That's natural to do. You want to see how the coach that was there previous. But like it is like they are waiting for the very second the game is over. Let's be a keyboard warrior. So it's just – it's a weird thing.
I told you why this is, right? It's because he got to break up with them,
yeah,
and they didn't get to break up with him.
Yeah.
And there's anger about that because he got to leave on his own terms,
yeah,
and he's happy now. It's like this really – it's like the marriage that you knew had to end, but you know, you like somebody's got to make the first move. He made the first move.
Yeah, he did. And Lenny Acuff, the Lipscomb coach, they serve on the NABC board together. They've been friends for like over a decade, is what Lenny said. And I'm trying to pull it up real quick. What he told me after the game, just we were talking about Cal. Yeah, he said I'm really happy for him. I think he's happy here. I know the Arkansas people have really embraced him, and he's thankful for that. Later, he said he had just something to say of like basically how he's seeing Cal have a different spirit about him right now, that he's just happy again. Like, it seems like, whatever was going on at Kentucky with them, I mean, surely that fan base knows like what the vibes were with the past few years, but like something about like this change needed to happen for both sides. Clearly, like, they're happy with a new coach. Arkansas's happy with a new coach. Cal seems happy, but then you still have these Kentucky fans who they just cannot move on, though. Like, they are not happy, clearly, because they feel the need to go to every single Arkansas post and just type away.
Speaking of the NABC, Calipari in his first year as the president of the NABC, I listened recently to an interview or more of a conversation that he had with Mike Krzyzewski on Coach K's Sirius XM show and wrote about it. It's in Hogs Illustrated. You can stay on top of all the Razorback sports with a digital subscription to our Hogs Illustrated app. You can read that story there. 20-plus issues of our magazine each year. Complete access to our website at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. Hogsillustrated.com/subscribe, or you can call 479-684-5509. To subscribe to Hogs Illustrated, and you can read that story about Coach Calipari and Coach Krzyzewski. Very interesting conversation about how Krzyzewski thinks Calipari's got a real chance to modernize American basketball. Mentioned Gonzaga losing out at Baylor. I'm sorry, losing out at Gonzaga earlier this week. Scott Drew on the Baylor coaches show this week had to say this about the game.
It was a great environment and really good for us early in the year to see just where we have to go and. Perfect storm. You take everything into account. We knew it was going to be a tough game with them returning 8 of their 9 starters and us having 1 returning starter. And ideally, you'd rather play that game a little bit later in the year because we'll get better as we learn each other's names and everything. But I think the great thing is
We found out some things that we might not have been able to find out this early in the year without playing that game. So I think that game will come back to help us in the future. And if you look, that first road game you play, you can talk about it. But 2 years ago, we got destroyed at Marquette. Last year, we got destroyed at Michigan State, and even tried to talk to our guys before the game, like Jeremy, your first road game with Duke was at Arkansas last year, and you got beat bad. Hmm. Norchad's first road game was at Kentucky. They got beat by 30. I mean, it's just that first road game, the emotion, environment, and everything, sometimes you got to get punched in the mouth. We didn't want to, but you have to get better.
Jeremy's talking about Jeremy Roach, who was with Duke when they played at Bud Walton Arena last season. His comments on the learning curve for your first road game, those are interesting to me because even though it's a neutral site, this is going to be a road game for Arkansas on Saturday because there's travel involved. And I know they went down to TCU last week and played in this exhibition game, but I do wonder how they handle the road game element of this, seeing as how it's really going to be their first one in a game that counts. And Baylor obviously went through that earlier this week at Spokane.
Yeah, and the thing about a road game is just I feel like you have to create your own energy so much. I mean, some players can really feed off the energy of an opposing crowd. Like, that gets them going. They like to silence it. Mm-hmm. I think that's the hardest part, particularly for, like, freshmen. Just, you've never quite experienced a crowd like that. And so it's just new. But yeah, I'll be interested to see what the showing is for Arkansas fans down there. I wouldn't be surprised if they pull a good crowd down there. But I mean, Baylor, I would think, is going to probably have just as many, if not more, fans in there.
We'll see. I mean, you know, and I talked about this with Anthony last week. There was a day where Dallas was like the basketball, you know, it was like Arkansas's kind of home away from home basketball-wise when they played in the Southwest Conference and they played the games at Reunion Arena. And I told him the other day, I said, it would not surprise me if there are more Razorback fans there than TCU fans. And that was the case last weekend for that. There weren't a whole lot of people in the arena to begin with. It'll be interesting to see what the turnout's like down there because, again, it's such a – and this is not to discount Baylor's influence at all, but Dallas is a huge Razorback market. It's a chance to go see Calipari and his team in a game that really matters on a Saturday night. You don't have the high school football thing that's – a factor, I think, in the exhibition last week against TCU. This will be interesting to see what the turnout's like.
Yeah, and I just think that the difference between the exhibition, like you said, there's not the football element. High school football is important there, and just Baylor basketball is much more important to them than I think TCU basketball is, just in their athletic program.
Oh yeah, no doubt about that.
And so I think that Baylor fans would definitely be willing to go to this game. A much quicker drive.
One of the interesting things here, the reason that we're able to talk to John Morris about this, the reason that Chuck Barrett's going to be there for the Razorbacks on Saturday, there's no football game for either of these teams.
Yeah.
And so that might free up some people going into Dallas to watch this game at American Airlines Center. It's going to be on ESPNU, 6:30 tip-off. John Shriffin and Jimmy Dykes are going to be on the call for Arkansas and Baylor. When we come back, we're going to talk about this weekend's football games, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We'll talk about the weekend football schedule here in just a minute. A couple of notes real quick. The Arkansas soccer team lost to Texas last night in double overtime at the SEC tournament. There were actually two upsets in Pensacola last night. Mississippi State, which did not lose an SEC game the entire year, lost to South Carolina. So it'll be South Carolina and Texas in the championship game. Arkansas and Mississippi State, the top two seeds in the tournament, going home. You know, it's not necessarily the worst outcome, I think, that either of those teams could have. When the SEC soccer tournament, it's a grind. And when you've got to play three games in 6 days, when, you know, you're accustomed to typically only playing 2 and 7 or 8 days, you know, it can take your legs out from underneath you before the start of the NCAA tournament. So what it does do, though, I think, is it hurts Arkansas's chances of getting one of those four number one seeds in the NCAA tournament. And they'll find out their seeding on Monday afternoon. That's when the NCAA postseason field will be announced for soccer. Arkansas is going to get some home games. They're going to host in the first round. They're probably going to be able to host in the second and the third round if they make it that far. But once it gets to the Elite Eight time, they might have to go on the road because they didn't win the SEC tournament. It cost them an extra data point that they potentially could have had by losing that one. And then Ethan, once he leaves here, he's going over to his favorite game of the year, Elementary Day, for the women's basketball team. They're taking on – okay, now, what's the name of the team?
It's East Texas A&M now. It was Texas A&M Commerce.
It was Texas A&M Commerce when we woke up yesterday morning.
Yes, and now it is – I was hoping that Arkansas, the women, would get the honor of playing the very first game against an East Texas A&M team, but there was a soccer game, apparently, yesterday where
– So the Texas A&M Board of Regents actually voted yesterday to change Texas A&M's Commerce, or the name of the university, to East Texas A&M. I guess this is kind of a throwback to their old name there at their college. So it's 10:30. It's Elementary Day at Bud Walton. There'll be a lot of you'll be able to read about this probably by the time you're hearing us.
You know, I don't know much about the history of A&M Commerce, East Texas A&M Athletics, but this was like bringing back the slobbering hog to them that they just went back to East Texas
A&M. Can we get Andrew Armstrong's thoughts on this?
I know. I was like, this is the Andrew Armstrong Bowl today. So I wonder if he'll be in attendance to watch this spectacular game. If he is, he's going to need to bring earplugs.
Maybe so. So Elementary Day, if you've never experienced it, there's about, I'd guess, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 elementary kids from some of the local schools that come to the game. It's it's high pitched. It's like a road environment for a home game because they just scream. They don't know who they're screaming for. They just scream.
Yeah, but it's last year's attendance was the fourth largest in program history for the team. I think they're expecting more today because last year it was a total of 11,026, and that, you know, all there are your regular like amount of fans that just were going to come anyway.
Yeah.
I think they're expecting more students than last year. So as long as they pull the same normal game day crowd, I think they're going to have like get another game up there in their program record books for largest attendance. It's just funny because it's a bunch of kids that just they're just getting out of school to scream and do Baby Shark.
Well, it's a football weekend. There's no Razorback football this weekend, but we're going to run through some of the games that are interesting. These are always some of our most fun weekends because, you know, we're not covering a game. We kind of get to sit on the couch like the rest of you and just watch college football. We won't pick these games, just a few games out of conference, though, to keep an eye on. Michigan goes to Indiana. The Hoosiers ranked number 8 in the playoff poll. They are a 14.5-point favorite. They're undefeated. I saw the other day where Kurt Cignetti's the first coach, I think, in modern history who's had two different schools who have started the season 8-0 in back-to-back seasons. They've got something going there at Indiana. Also a little bit of a local connection. Caden Turner, a former Fayetteville player, is on that Indiana team. So that game tomorrow, Army, ranked number 25, undefeated, goes down to Denton, Texas to take on North Texas. This is kind of a tricky game. You know, UNT is 5-3, and two of their losses have been really close, competitive, high-scoring games against against Tulane and Memphis. And, you know, both of those teams are pretty good teams this year. North Texas can score. Chandler Morris, Chad's son.
He's the number one in the nation in passing yards.
Yeah, he's the quarterback there. The question there is, you know, can Army score with North Texas if it gets into a shootout? That might be kind of an interesting game to watch. You've got in the Big 12, Colorado goes to Texas Tech. The Buffaloes ranked number 20, but Texas Tech just upset Iowa State last week in Ames. Weird things happen in Lubbock at all times of the year, but especially in November down at Jones AT&T Stadium. So that's an interesting game. I wonder if NBC regrets putting Florida State and Notre Dame in primetime. This was a decision that was made back in probably May or June when it looked like Florida State was going to be a national championship contender, and now Notre Dame's a 26.5-point favorite for this game. Don't expect any, you know, real competitiveness in that game. Notre Dame ranked number 10 in the playoff poll. And one more out-of-conference game that I think is worth watching, a little Big 12 after dark action, an ESPN 9:15 Central Time kickoff. It's the Holy War. Number 8 BYU, undefeated, goes over to Salt Lake City to take on Utah. You know, Utah was picked to win the Big 12 this year, and they've been a little bit of a disappointment. BYU seems like they've caught some breaks. They've caught lightning in the bottle a little bit, and that should be a good matchup.
Yeah. I've been high on all year on BYU. I just really like the culture that they have there. I think that they're one of those teams that the team embodies the coach.
And Kalani Sitake.
They're a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right, we move to the SEC now. It's an 11. ABC is really where you want to have your television set to on Saturday. It's going to be a triple header. First game, you know, probably not a lot of interest there, but down the board, a lot of interest on Saturday. The first game, 11 o'clock tip-off on – or, I'm sorry, I'm in basketball mode. It's an 11 o'clock kickoff on ABC. Florida, possibly with a walk-on quarterback from the Ivy League, going down to Austin to take on the Longhorns. Texas is a 22.5-point favorite, Ethan.
Yeah, I think Texas is going to handle them with ease. I think Florida's shown a lot of fight this year, but there's just – it's just – not an ideal schedule situation at all. We've said this all year, but this just, especially whenever you start taking injuries into account. I like Texas by a comfortable margin.
Texas coming off a bye week, kind of an interesting week there. Jonte Cook, a real highly rated receiver who was with them, left the team this week, had 8 catches, 2 touchdowns this year. So I think he was like 6th in the pecking order on their receiver rotation. But you always wonder how things like that might affect the locker room, you know, when there's something going on like that and somebody leaves the team. But I don't see any reason that Texas would struggle with Florida, especially if DJ Lagway can't play for Florida at quarterback. I think Texas probably wins pretty big in that game. A 3:15 kickoff on SEC Network. This is an interesting one, a very interesting one. Two teams who I think probably have a legitimate argument to be ranked this week in the playoff poll, and neither of them were. South Carolina goes to Vanderbilt, and I can't remember the last time a South Carolina Vanderbilt was anticipated like this one is.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick South Carolina. They really impressed me last weekend. That pass rush is really good. I think the running game with Rocket Sanders, you know, I just like where they're trending right now. Vanderbilt, I'm a believer in Vandy this year, but I just don't think that. I just don't think it's a favorable matchup with South Carolina.
South Carolina is a 5.5-point favorite. There's always that fear, I think, of a letdown after you've won a big game the way that South Carolina did. But you know, we've said this for a few weeks here. South Carolina's been trending in the right direction. Even in some of those games they lost, like Alabama, they played pretty well. The game's at Vanderbilt. You know what Nashville's known for? Hot chicken. And here come the Gamecocks. They're red hot coming in. I think South Carolina wins this. It wouldn't surprise me to see it go either way. But I think South Carolina, they're still trying to get to bowl eligibility. And Vanderbilt got there last week. And I think sometimes there's a little bit of a tendency to let your foot off the gas once you've kind of gotten to whatever your goal was. Mm. I think South Carolina, there's a pretty good chance that they could go in there and win that. A 6 o'clock kickoff on ESPN, Mississippi State, and its SpongeBob defense goes to Knoxville to play Tennessee. The Volunteers are a 24.5-point favorite.
Yeah. It's going to be ugly. Dylan Sampson's about to run for – it's just name how many yards he wants, I think. Mm. And then Nico's going to have a big game in the air. And just everybody does. It's just welcome to your pad statting game.
Mississippi State is like – they're like medicine for an offense that's been sputtering. You know what I mean? I mean, even Arkansas, they went down there to Starkville, and they had a huge game offensively. And, you know, I mean, you say what you want about what they did against Ole Miss the other day. I thought they had a decent offensive game against the Rebels, and I think that maybe going to Starkville got them a little bit on the right track. Florida seemed like they started to kind of turn things around after they played Mississippi State. A&M did for at least a short time. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, Tennessee, I think they win this big. Mississippi State, they can't stop anything. They can't stop anything. How do we expect them to stop the Volunteers, even if that's a little bit of an offensive challenge team? Speaking of offensively challenged teams, a 6:45 kickoff on SEC Network. Oklahoma goes to Missouri. Missouri may be without Brady Cook. And this looks like a totally different Tigers team whenever he's not playing.
Yeah, they are. And I think Oklahoma's going to catch them at a great time. I'm picking the Sooners.
I'm picking the Sooners, too. Now, Oklahoma, this game started, I think, at the beginning of the week with Missouri as a 2.5-point favorite. It has flipped. And I think that probably Cook's status has a little bit to do with that. The Sooners are a 2.5-point favorite going on to the road. Even though Missouri's ranked in the top 25, we don't quite understand why. You know, since OU made that coordinator change from Seth Luttrell to Joe John Finley a couple of weeks back, I've watched a little bit of their games, and I know one of them was against Maine. The other one was against Ole Miss, though. And they put Jackson Arnold back in at quarterback. It just looks like the offense is a little bit more comfortable than it was early in the season. If Brady Cook can't go, I think there's a very good chance OU can go there and win because OU can play defense really well. Even if Cook can go, if he's limited at all, I think this is a game that OU can go in and win. I got the Sooners winning in Columbia. I've said all year I'm not a believer in this Mizzou team. Wouldn't surprise me to see Oklahoma go in there. Again, Oklahoma's got something to play for, bowl eligibility.
Oklahoma's favored by 2.5 points, which tells you what you need to know. I mean,
it's an old Big Eight rivalry.
Yep.
Remember when they played in the Big Eight? No, you don't. You don't. I do.
I do remember when they played in the Big 12, though. I'm not that much of a – I mean, I'm a baby, but, like, I
remember – Their last Big 8 game would have been 1995. Were you there for that?
No, but I saw them play in the Big 12.
I'm just giving you a hard time. Okay, 2:30 kickoff, ABC, Georgia and Ole Miss. This is a really interesting game. Georgia's a 2.5-point favorite. Bulldogs ranked number 3 in the playoff poll. The Rebels ranked number 16. For Ole Miss, it's do or die if they're going to make the playoff. If they beat Georgia, there's a pretty good chance that they're going to get into the playoff. If they win, their chances are basically out the window. One thing to watch in this game, there is a 70% chance of rain in Oxford on Saturday afternoon. That is interesting to me when you've got a team like Ole Miss that can really throw the ball around. But we know that rain can neutralize a passing game.
Yeah. I mean, they do have a really good running back, though.
Do we know what Henry Parrish's status is?
Yeah, I'm about to say that's important. What's it? It is him who he exited the Arkansas game.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I mean, he went off on a cart.
Yeah.
Didn't look good at all.
I'm about to say he's fourth in the SEC in rushing.
He's listed as out.
So you don't have him for this game, which that, you know, if rain does play a factor, you wonder how that's going to go. I'm picking Ole Miss, though. I just think that they are the hottest team right now. I wouldn't want to be any team playing them right now. I just think – I said this entering the Arkansas game against – like, I did not feel good about any chance of Arkansas winning because I just know what Ole Miss has. They had that slip-up loss to Kentucky that makes people mischaracterize them, and then they had a game against LSU that, honestly, you know, Arkansas likes to point at games on its schedule that it feels like it should have won. Ole Miss literally led that game until they didn't at the very end. So
Henry Parrish out, Matt Jones, another one of their running backs, doubtful, Trey Harris, doubtful, Jordan Watkins, questionable, Caden Lee, who had a big game last week, questionable, Jaden Williams, a really good offensive lineman who they've been missing, questionable for this game. If it were perfect conditions, I think I might take Ole Miss to win this game at home, but I'm telling you, when it rains, give me the team that can run the ball. I think ETN and this Georgia offense, and this may be the best thing for Georgia, the fact that it's raining, because it may keep Carson Beck from throwing the ball, because that's kind of been the problem the last several weeks is that he's been throwing a ton of picks. I think I'm going to pick Georgia on the road to win this. Again, if it was perfect conditions, I might change my mind, but I think the rain could play a pretty significant factor in that game. And then rain, you know, they say it never rains at Death Valley. Well, I think it's going to rain Saturday night. There's a 60% chance of rain in Baton Rouge when Alabama and LSU play. Both of these teams are 6-2. The Crimson Tide are a 2.5-point favorites on the road.
That line interests me. It just surprises me that Alabama's favored on the road in this one, because Alabama still has – they haven't really done anything to overwhelmingly impress me. They just haven't. The Georgia win was impressive in the moment, but we've seen all these SEC teams have holes. Like, there's not your typical just – you know, going to run the table, or one loss. Like, everybody's susceptible to one or two losses. I like LSU at home.
See, I'm going to go with Alabama. And I know Alabama has – both of their losses have been on the road, but Vanderbilt's not a bad team. Tennessee's not a bad team. They beat Georgia at home. They beat South Carolina. That's looking like a better win, you know, every day now. Again, when it rains, I like the team that can run the ball. And they've got Jam Miller, the running back, who's been really good for them. We know that Milroe can run the ball. Nussmeier and the LSU doesn't run the ball real well. They had some success against Arkansas, but overall this year, they haven't run the ball real well. We heard Chris Doering talk about this yesterday, and I kind of fall into the same boat. I was really impressed with Nussmeier until I watched him play against Texas A&M, and I just didn't think he handled the second half of that game very well at all. And so it makes you wonder how he might handle close games. He handled a close game against Ole Miss. Give him credit for that. But again, if it rains Saturday night, give me the team that can run the ball. And I think Alabama can. I think Alabama can go into Death Valley and win that game on the road. LSU, they've been one of the hardest teams to figure out this year. Alabama's been somewhat hard to figure out, but I think Alabama's played more consistently than LSU has.
Yeah. We'll see. It's definitely a good slate of games.
So it'll be really interesting to see how this goes. Obviously, there's a lot of SEC teams that still have playoff hopes. You know, you'd have to think that if Alabama or somebody's going to lose in Death Valley, the loser of that game, probably their playoff chances are over. Again, Ole Miss, their playoff chances could be over. I think Georgia could withstand a loss and still get into the playoff. Tennessee, they're not going to lose this week, and so obviously they're still in the playoff consideration. Texas, too. Really interesting to watch down the stretch here in the SEC because a lot of real, real big games coming up. We appreciate you being with us. Hope you come to our website, wholehogsports.com, throughout the weekend. Obviously, we'll have a lot of Arkansas-Baylor basketball coverage this weekend. And starting next week, we'll have some Arkansas-Texas football coverage on our website. Have a great weekend, everyone. We hope to see you Monday.